You are listening to Icons and Icons, a Final Fantasy XIV Game Club podcast. This is episode 58, covering the Ravana trial and the ascent up Mount Somal. I'm your host, Chris Taylor. My pronouns are he, him, and with me is my esteemed co-host,
Ryan Beatty, they, them.
You almost lost your esteem for putting that fucking Google Drive anonymous tag right where I was trying to read.
Oh, God, I'm so fucking sorry.
What happened last time?
I did not know that was there. Last episode, we continued our pilgrimage to try to entreat with Raze Velger and petition for peace with the dragons. Along the way, we... Oh, wow. Yeah, that's rough shit. You're right. Gross.
I'm sorry.
No.
So petty.
It's good. It's good that I know this. Okay. So... Last episode, we continued our pilgrimage to try to entreat with Raze Velger and petition for peace with the dragons. Along the way, we met the wild chocobo trappers of Tailfeather and learned that the hive mind bug tribe known as the Nath have been waging a war of expansion against the Dravanians, which, of course, was started by a meddling Asian. We hatched an insane plan to make the hive extremely mad and then put our weapons away to be carried off as a sacrifice for Ravana's insatiable hunger. We are in the middle of that and begin this episode with a quest called Lord of the Hive.
So we begin this episode with a quest called Lord of the Hive. We, along with Yasail, are surrounded by the Nath in the center of their stronghold. We sheathe our weapons and Yasail announces that we are ready to throw ourselves at the mercy of the Nath god, and they lead us swiftly into their lair. Yasail signals to us that because she is intimately familiar with summoning, she is better equipped to act once we are before their god. She notes that the nearby river noise might mask our escape if we need it. Also known as maybe go in case your gear is broken or whatever. We head deeper into Ravana's chambers. The Tushnath who brought us here all cross their arms and pray to their gods. This animation is so fucking sick. Mm-hmm. Four glowing swords appear in front of us, bury their points in the earth, and begin they angle out at 45 degrees, then spin in a circle, creating a flame tornado. Out of which the winged four-armed primal, who really does look like a Kamen Rider, just comes out. And also, he's the best. I love him.
God, yeah, yeah. Ravana is just so sick.
And by that, we mean he has three lines, but also he has a personality, unlike all of the other ones before.
Right, right. And I feel like the music of the trial adds to his personality, but not in a way that is so extremely annoying like Mogglemog.
It made me so upset when we got to Mog home and it was
Yeah. At the end of the episode, I was just like, oh, fuck this music again.
I'm going to tell you right now, I did do the mid-eye level savage of this fight. We're not going to talk about it because it's a fucking lot.
Oh, really? Awesome. That's fun. Okay.
What if I told you all the walls were broken except for in one spot?
Ah! Great.
And the butterfly phase goes on forever.
Oh, that sucks. That sucks. That sounds like something that I would not find fun.
It rocked.
Good. I'm glad. The worshipful Nath officially name us as a blood sacrifice, for which Ravana calls us feeble fleshlings. Yasail jumps in at this point and assures the primal that we did not come to contest Nath territory. We only want to know why the Nath are waging war against the dragons. We don't wish for a pact with the tribe, which is what they initially think. He's like, no, we're not going to make a fucking treaty with you. But we do wish for peace with the dragons. And while the Nath continue to wage war, Ysail's goal is totally out of reach. So she's like, why fight when you have not ever risen up like this in such numbers before? Ravana is like, shut the fuck up. Your question is meaningless. To live is to fight. We're out here to wage war. You dummy. The Nath have been biding their time during the Dragonsong War for their perfect moment to strike, and now they have summoned Ravana and wish to eradicate the Dravanians outright.
Yasail closes her eyes and nods solemnly. Ravana's very existence is an obstacle to our goal. She challenges the primal since he is so fond of battle. If we win, she wants Ravana to promise to withdraw Nath troops from our Dravanian territory. I cannot believe that this is just a hand wave later.
I know.
Ravana finds her foolhardy bravery amusing, cackles, and accepts the challenges. His terms and conditions, if he wins, we must be thralls in his army until we die. And Yasail's like, yeah, that's cool. Didn't even ask. Ysael closes her eyes, casts her arms out to her side, and she begins to channel aether energy from the nearby crystals, and then she transforms into Shiva, primal of the heretics, much to the shock of Ravana. She is so small in comparison to Ravana. Ravana is so big.
She gets, like, none of the, like, primal growth thing that a lot of the other primals do. It's very sad, very pathetic.
Well, she's, like, relatively small even in her fight, but she's still, like, four of us. Ravana's, like, 8 or 10 of us.
Yeah, true. Shiva draws an icicle sword, and the two primals clash. She casts a blizzard that covers the Nath god in ice. He breaks free with a spinny sword move. They continue to spar, escalating their primal powers against one another until Ravana finally impales Shiva on one of his swords.
This whole scene, super cool, because basically they're like, hey, what if we did all the raid moves in this cutscene?
Yeah.
Like, including the one where if you accidentally spin the boss, it just one-shots your whole party.
I totally didn't make that connection before, but yeah.
Yeah, you do the bow stuff, you do the sword and the shield, she does the big, you know, the one that looks like a bunch of hooks coming out of the ground.
Damn.
All the stuff.
Well done. And it's just also just like a well shot and choreographed fight as well. It's great. Shiva tries to use this, like, getting impaled thing as a feint and breathes ice breath on the bug god, but he breaks free and Ysael's ether begins to fade. She thought she was strong enough to topple him, but needed more crystals in the end. She transforms again into her mortal Elizan form and collapses to the ground. Ravana proclaims Ysael to be nothing to him, and he turns to us, asking if we are warrior or craven. We draw our weapon, which excites the god because he's looking for a challenge. He retreats to his lair in another column of flame and wants him to follow us. And with that, Thok asked Thok hard is now accessible.
Since they did the thing, started doing that thing in the Shadowbringers patches where you have like the columns of light that your allies are going to come out of. It's really goofy now in retrospect. They're just like, I'm going to go to this other room over here. I'll see you in 5 minutes.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's like their instancing capabilities have improved like tenfold since this was originally a thing.
The battle takes place in a circular arena ringed by uneven and crude fencing that protects the combatants from a steep drop. The first boss theme is an oom-pa-pa style waltz unlike any other boss music in the game. Ravana gradually accumulates bloodlust throughout the fight. Every 100 blood loss, the boss gains another damage up buff. And this would act as a soft and rage timer if there were any challenge at all, or if you had, say, the minimum gear score.
Right.
His primary attack is a sequence of 3 AoE sword slashes, a circle around him, and then a series of lines around the arena, and then a donut. And then every once in a while, two of you get marked with purple icons, which is your cue to spread to opposite sides to avoid catching your allies and the heavy AoE. Ravana buffs himself to parry and counter certain positional attacks, but let's be real, you're going to turbo own this guy like super fast and not know about any of these mechanics.
Ravana summons the butterflies here that need to be killed before he casts his ultimate. Otherwise, each unkilled one will call a sword down to the arena that will add more damage to his ultimate attack. 3 swords would mean a wipe, but we're not going to come close to getting 3 swords. I killed them all. A little more than halfway through the fight, he lifts us all up into the sky, says some shit, and then performs his ultimate attack, which presents as an arena-wide whirlwind of sword slashes that also erupt into flames. And so it's like the sky explodes with sword fire, and it knocks a lot of the fence posts around the arena down, and a deep, goofy baritone voice starts bellowing in the soundtrack, and a new, even sicker song starts.
Yeah, it's like a Viking song about being an ant guy.
Yeah. So from this point on, if we are in range for his knockback attacks, we have to make sure that there's some kind of guardrail behind us or we will fall off of the arena. He repeats a lot of the same attacks in phase two, only faster paced. And then he also, at this point, will start casting little floating purple orbs that if you get hit with them, they explode. Or if you get hit with them, you get marked with a Vuln up. And then he will single target, like rush you. He will like leap towards you and his path becomes a line AoE. So that can suck if you if your party isn't paying any attention to positioning, but it's again not really a threat.
He also does the, you remember the thing that Behemoth does in the twinning? He does that also, where it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, and it'll be an AoE around the targets, so like yeah. People can spread out and stuff.
Yeah,
which I think is the first time like a boss has telegraphed, I'm gonna hit these people in this order, so like make sure you're all shuffled around and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Which they then start to use a lot more in later patches.
Yeah. After we kill Ravana, per the agreement, he lays down his weapons. His Nath take two petrified steps back and throw up their hands. And Yasail, now recovered, approaches us and tells us she wishes she had our skill in battle and that she is beginning to see why so many place their faith in us. This was the first time she has seen us at full power, and we are a marvel to her. Bro, I beat you up like 5 hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You, and then I also beat up all your friends just to make sure, and you know about it. She trusts Ravana to keep his word despite his savagery and believes that the Dravanian should no longer be harried by the Nath, provided they don't trespass upon Nath lands. And she bids us to come share the glad tidings with Vidofnir. Far above us, once again, an Ascian is observing us. She says we have achieved the impossible once again, but that her cause is winning in the long run. Because each mortal heart that succumbs to fear and fury is another voice in the course beseeching divine succor. Warring gods will shake the earth and our world will be consumed in a storm of chaos.
Back at the Hive, Alphanode is really relieved to see us. He apparently was just like a real scaredy cat the whole time. We relay our journey in battle to him. Yasail reassures him that Ravana will keep his word, for there was, quote, honor beneath his savagery, end quote. She credits the miracle of our survival to us, the Warriors of Light. Estinian never doubted us, but he just clowns on Alphanode for being so beside himself with worry. Flustered, Alphanode contends that, hey, it's time to, like, get back on task. Come on, let's go. For this was like, just a really small step in our journey with the goal of securing an audience with Rhys Velger. We're still on a time crunch. Yasail chides Estinian for beating up on such a little guy. He's like, you know, come on, he is still a child, and Estinian, who knows what's up, is like, yeah, but he's a really fucking annoying child.
That's right. We give Vidofnir the good news. While she is quite surprised that we are able to contend with Ravana's biting blades, she keeps her word and tells us the way to Sam'al. Unfortunately, Nidhogg's minions and the map design won't make this journey very easy. When Vidofnir instructs us to cross the bridge on the second floor of the tower and make our way into the mountain, Ryan Beatty absolutely does not listen to her and heads to the top floor of the two big tower. It is enormous.
Uh-huh.
Head onto the mountain's narrow, steep outdoor switchbacks that make us lost and it's impossible to jump down the large vertical spaces. Instead, you do what Chris Taylor does and just go to the second floor as you were told, where the bridge takes you right where you need to go in 10 seconds.
God, it sucked so bad. I was so lost.
It's like the top of the mountain in like Island of Paradise. You just can't jump down anyway. It sucks so bad. Deep in the heart of this cavern, a dragon statue is entwined with a shard of volcanic rock and a helix-shaped scepter. Vidofnir flies down and grants us passage. Her eyes glow and the bulb on the scepter erupts in light and shoots a column of energy skyward.
Vidofnir warns us, though she grants us passage, our presence will be unwelcome. This mountain is both a holy land and a resting place, and the denizens inside of it have not seen our kind in nearly 1,000 years. She warns us to beware of Nidhogg's minions during our ascent, who will take great offense at our intrusion. We are just kind of like busting into the dragons' homes and massacring all the angry ones to try to get to the one that might agree with us. So cool. So finally, she addresses Estinian and warns him to keep the stolen power that he wields in check, lest it breed further despair. Estinian wants to press on immediately, but Isael cautions that we need to plan and prepare first. Nidhogg's consort Teoman guards the summit. When Estinian says, "I'll simply kill any dragon that gets in our way," Isael calls him a butcher. Estinian shoves his finger in Isael's face, spitting out, "Listen, heretic, 'twas to save Ishgard and her people that I first lent my support to this doubtful venture. He promised to be peaceful with Rhys Velger, but he didn't say anything about Teoman. And because she is such a like a heated enemy of Ishgard, it is his duty as Azure Dragoon to slay her."
You ever think about how this expansion is just about creating the two-state solution?
Fuck. Yeah, I mean it. It is.
You ever think about how hard it must be on those dragons?
Oh my god. Fuck. It really does highlight Final Fantasy XIV's just terminal brand of liberalism. That it is such a slow acknowledgement of their colonialist beginnings, and they just hit every rung of the ladder on the way up. It's remarkable.
Yeah. Isael believes Estinian is beyond redemption. Alphanode once again tries to stop their bickering by pressing forward to our shared goal. Before we enter, Alphanode says that we have no other choice but to avoid conflict when possible and defend ourselves when necessary. Estinian feels the weight of Dravanian rancor pressing down upon him, and Isael expresses her regret for unleashing the Horde on Ishgard and reminds herself that a dragon in the throes of rage cannot be controlled or calmed. Shout out to how they try to pretend that Estinian and Isael are here the whole time during this dungeon.
Well, they're available as NPCs now, so that's how I ran through it.
I didn't do that because you can't do min-eye level duty support stuff. And yeah, also, yeah. I would not want to.
It was fine. It was honestly fine. It was a lot less interminably slow than the stuff in Shadowbringers.
I bet it's fine if you're not tanking, but when you're tanking, you're literally just waiting for however long the NPCs decide it will take for them to do their good attacks.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I did it specifically because I wanted to stay on my DPS roll. I didn't want to heal, yeah. And I didn't want to wait for the queue.
With carnivorous flowers spitting poison mist and overgrown vines. If we decide to run the dungeon with our NPC friends, they will provide incidental dialogue during our ascent. Most of this dialogue is just Isael trying to reason with the dragons and getting sad that she can't, and then Estinian saying something bloodthirsty. The first section of the climb is lined with Drakespur, a plant enemy that will continue to summon pollen spewing ads until it is destroyed. We focus damage on the Drakespur first and then go for the lesser enemies. This is the biggest threat in the entire dungeon, even at my level.
Easily.
The first boss is named Raskovnik, and he is a ragged-looking Ochu-like boss. He is a really eventful boss because he's like a lobotomized version of the Coil boss. Mm-hmm. But he will summon in the Drake Hornet ads throughout the fight that will slowly make their way to the center of the arena. And if they reach him, Raskovnik will target a player, suck them towards it, eat any nearby hornets for a damage buff, and then cast an instant AoE around itself. The rest of the players will clear out from this, but the primary defense against this attack is to simply kill the hornets before they reach the center. And it's very easy to do so.
Mm-hmm. In the caves after Raskovnik, we are harried by first a fire dragon and then an ice dragon, both of which breathe AoE like elemental bombs at us while we're dealing with other mobs. And then when we either like get far enough or just wait a long enough time, they will also land and fight us. After we wound them, which just is like 50-60% of their damage, they each fly off. Neither of them are.
At least the ice one is cool because he deposits things that spawn adds.
Yes, that is neat. The like ice breath summoning more adds is neat.
Yeah.
The second boss, once we get deep enough into the cave, is a dinosaur with a weird crest over its face named Myath. The boss will summon four untargetable oozes and will leap towards each respective ooze throughout the fight, which changes its attacks. If it leaps on a blue ooze, it's a spread area of effect. And then if it's a red ooze, we all have to stack.
If only I had a gap closer.
Oh, God, yeah. As a tank, that would suck so bad for this fight. It's leaping all around.
Let me tell you about when you get a gap closer's paladin. It's level 72.
Oh, that's brutal. Most of the way through the fight, it will do an ultimate attack where it summons a much larger green ooze called Chime of the Mountain. And this, or I guess it's probably Chime of the Mountain, which is because this is an ooze and Chime is like a bile kind of gross. Anyway, and then this one is targetable and we have to destroy it before its catch finishes. But if you're not min eye level, this is really not a problem.
When you're min eye level, you kill the boss before the cast is 2/3 of the way done.
Wow. Great.
Like, I would tell you, the gap between min eye level and current at the beginning of the expansion, this is like the first dungeon, right? Mm-hmm. Is really, really small. And I was very disappointed. I expected this to be cooler at all.
That's a big bummer.
I've had harder runs on the normal version just because the people you play with can be bad. Like, they don't know what to do with the meteors at the end or whatever.
Right. Yeah. You have to choose min eye level and so you're going to pay attention and know what you're doing.
So we've cleared the vines and plants of section one, the fiery and icy caverns of section two. Then we get to the open sky and ruined dragon statues and platforms, the top section. And then there's just a bunch of normal mobs that you kill to get through. Mm-hmm. And again, so easy. You could wall to wall pull even on min eye level.
And it's literally a wall in this case because it blocks you from the boss until you kill the final two dragons.
I'm not going to pretend I didn't have to try really hard to do so, but you can.
Well, that's good. Trying is good sometimes.
Well, no, I mean like cast cover and all of your Sheltrons hard.
Oh, God. Okay.
The wounded fire and ice dragons return at the end for one last stand together. They're guarding the boss arena, but eventually go down and the path Tiamon is open. Like every major dragon boss, Tiamon can cast meteors down upon us. It's very familiar at this point where when you get one, you run to the edge of the arena on opposite sides to minimize the overlap of the massive meteor AoEs. And this arena is so big that if you tank the boss at the far north and people drop the things at the south, you don't take any damage from it at all.
Incredible.
Yeah. Tiamon also casts... Oh, very familiar with this. This is what I got kicked over. Tiamon also casts a Starburst line AoE attack called Chaos Blast at random spots on the arena. Spoilers, this is on the healer.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder if... Okay, interesting.
That's why I died 1,000 times to it.
God, that sucks.
She also has a Cleave Breath attack.
At 50% health, Tiamat moves to the center of the arena, becomes untargetable, and her wings begin glowing. Because dragons are extremely extra and dramatic in this game, they are named Right Wing of Injury and Left Wing of Tragedy.
It's called the Left Wing of Tolerance, excuse me.
I mean, we're always mourning shit. It's true. Woof. While we destroy her wings, which seems kind of cruel, honestly, Tiamat is repeatedly casting Heaven's Fall, which is a cluster of circular AoEs around a single target that we simply have to, like, move out of the way of. But they do. It's like a bunch of rocks. And so it's not a single circle. It's like a bunch of them kind of in an irregular pattern. When her wings are destroyed, the final phase of the fight begins. The meteors and chaos blasts continue, but now she also has a raid wide called Darkstar. All in all, at just kind of standard queuing difficulty, the fight never poses much of a challenge or a time tax, even in this case, like with the trusts with Isael and Estinian.
Yeah. After Tiamat's death, we're once again sent to the astral plane where the fire crystal reconnects to us just for some reason. Estinia believes there are no other dragons nearby when a horrible roar shakes the sky. Estinian clutches his chest and collapses to the ground as he senses Nidhogg's rage. He knows we are here and his fury bleeds through the eye. Estinian shakes it off, recovers, and walks ahead, and Shiva wonders when the chain of vengeance will ever end. The rest of the party ascends the steps after Estinian.
We get a little more Count Edmont narration.
Thank God, I wondered what a rich guy thought about this.
Yeah. To the peak of Somal, at the end of a perilous mountain path, whence could be seen a string of pearl-like islands floating impossibly atop a sea of clouds, to a domain where dragons and men had once lived in harmony, whose majesty no mortal eye had glimpsed for nigh on 1,000 years, they came.
Alphanode here is very cold, because Somal is said to be the highest mountain in all of Eorzea. The mountaintop's horizon is dotted with a purple storm, and giant cotton-like dandelions line the path. Surrounding us are dozens of floating islands, many adorned with grand and delicate architecture similar to the ruins of the dragon-human civilization. Once we reach the Mogholm Aetherite, Alphanode points out that we have scaled the mountain, but we still don't know how to find Trace Velger. As we all stand around and ponder, the really bad Moogle music starts up, and a Moogle with a glowing magenta palm floats by behind Yasail. Yasail turns around and wonders what kind of creature it is. It kupopos and wiggles around and then flies off into a cave, and Alphanode and us, we look at each other, and we thought that all the Moogles left, quote, the heavens and lived in the Twelveswood now, and we never expected to see one up here. I'm not gonna lie, like, I'm glad the Moogles are here only so Sidurgu can have to interact with them.
These Moggles are charming to me. I don't like the King Moggle Mog whimsy music at all, but they don't annoy me up here. And plus, yeah, they're so far away. We only see them here. This is the only time we have to interact with Moogles.
That's right. It's an old quarantine zone, so we can really easily drop like a Moab on them.
Fuck. Alphanode wants to give chase. Perhaps the Moogle knows how to find Trace Velger. The cave opens up into a wide underground cavern lined with giant colorful mushrooms and exposed roots in the ceiling. We split up to widen our search. We notice that concealing magic is hanging out where, like, the air appears warped, and so people are trying to hide something, or someone is trying to hide something. As we investigate, we chat with our crew. Isael thinks that the Moogle is really cute, which alters her evil ice queen image a little bit, and she's like, what? I can find things cute? And Estinian doesn't know what the fuck a Moogle is and doesn't even really believe that we saw one.
He's like, I don't know what that is, but I guess I'll look for it. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, man.
I love him.
Alphanode's like, no, I know we saw a Moogle, and like, this is the only way that we're gonna find Trace of Elgar, so we have to stop what we're doing and do this quest now. I'm determined to get to the bottom of this.
I just remembered that we have like a spirit Moogle. What the fuck was that about? That never came up ever again.
Wait, what?
In the intro.
Oh, right. What the hell?
Yeah, what the fuck was that? Well, speaking of what the fuck was that, there are no side quests this week because they're all really boring hunt and fetch quests. Mm-hmm. There's like a very involved one to help the Vath come to terms with individuality, but that opens up the Vath tribe quests, and there's not time for that in this episode. And you could also learn more about the dragons of Annex Trine and why they like to lay around so much. It's because their animations are bad. But we'll be returning there in a future episode. And that's it. What did we think of the things discussed in this episode?
This is the first, I mean, this was just basically like an action movie episode. There, you know, there's not really a lot morally to grapple with right now. They're really trying to sell like the Esail and Astinian odd couple. Sometimes it works for me, sometimes it doesn't.
Most of the time it doesn't, because right now they're still like kind of non-personalities, really.
Yeah, they've done some work with Esail. She's kind of rounding out a little bit. I feel like I've got some perspective on Astinian because of the Dragoon 30 to 50 quests. So there's stuff there, but yeah, just presented as is in the main story quest, you're right. They've not done the work to deepen them, and so it's just kind of like pitting these two basic viewpoints off one another over and over and over again. Like, you know, he's overzealous. She's a heretic. And yeah, both. It's fun when there is a primal fight or, you know, a trial and a dungeon, one right after the next. I like it when they pace it like that on occasion. And both of these really ooze mood, even though they're not super hard. But yeah, like, I love Ravana so much. Those are my thoughts. What are your thoughts?
I like that we have a dungeon. I like that the dungeon is varied. I like that it has literally any mechanics at all. There mm-hmm. used to be mechanics before this, but they took them all out already. So there are mechanics now. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
I don't know. This basically nothing happens this episode, which is a big bummer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's mostly play this episode.
The song for Samal slaps, by the way. Love it.
Yeah, yeah. Great music in this episode. Both cases.
It's on for 2 weeks if we remember to record a podcast. Yeah. Yeah, I literally just forgot and played Dead Space the whole time I was supposed to be recording a podcast.
God, it's funny because I like was terrified. I was so scared that I was going to miss the podcast because I had been out.
You know what? You can't be late if you never intended to appear. So you were still late by 40 minutes somehow.
Yeah, you had that chat history of me being so late, of first me giving a heads up and then being so late. But yeah, you just didn't show.
Yeah, I didn't even notice until 9:30. Look, I arrived exactly what I intended to, which was not at all.
I am once again Ryan Lady, I guess. I cannot escape it.
Peace be with you.
Bye.
Thanks for being a patron. Your continued patronage helps us to make the shows that we all love without it becoming a financial burden or having to put ads in them. In case you didn't know, we have other shows that you might enjoy, such as Being Mr. Boot, Lightning Strikes Thrice, Being Jim Davis, and last but not least, Boku No Stop. You can help us out further by rating and reviewing your favorite show on iTunes and telling a friend about our podcast. Thanks for being a loyal patron. We'll see you next time.